This is Smart City Dialogue, the podcast of the International Smart Cities Network, in short, ISCN. I am Julia Brennauer, and today it is my pleasure to welcome our guest for this ISCN podcast episode, Ms. Alice Igiro. She is Director of Smart Cities at the Ministry of ICT and Innovation of Rwanda. Today, we would like to shed light on the Smart Cities initiatives in Rwanda that were launched by the Ministry of ICT and Innovation. Dear Alice, could you please tell us more about some of these Smart Cities initiatives?
Thank you, Julia. Sure. The government has really tried to aggressively launch the country into a smart, turning it into a smart nation. And that's cross-cutting, so across the mobility sector, smart mobility and transport, healthcare, education, and so on. And maybe if I could speak to some of the initiatives that we've had, I think our mobility sector has benefited the most, where we have car hailing or car sharing. We have Volkswagen and a few others that in a bid to try and reduce the number of vehicles on the road so we can reduce the carbon emissions, because this Rwanda has identified that transport is one of the top greatest pollutants, sources of pollution. So we are trying to really reduce the number of vehicles on the road, and that's why we've introduced car sharing. But we've also introduced electric mobility, again, under the same agenda to try and reduce pollution from transport sector. We also have CCTV across the city, but also across the country. We have something that we call Tap and Go, which is a smart transport card for transport fares. This is also in a bid to remove or to turn into a cashless economy. So these are some of the initiatives that I can quickly speak to. There are many others in air pollution sensors, waste management sensors across the city. So it's a lot that has been put in place with really the aim to make the cities, you know, smart cities in general, is to make the citizens' life better, or they improve their quality of life. And so that's what we've really done to this point.
Thanks so much, Alice. That's very interesting, because we can see similar challenges also in the partner countries of the International Smart Cities Network. And it's great to see how you approach these challenges with your initiatives. Another topic which is always bothering the partner countries of our network is public procurement. It's always part of the smart cities discussion. And mm-hmm. Could you perhaps elaborate a bit more on the approaches of the Ministry of ICT and Innovation?
Sure. So we've actually been, I believe it's beginning of this year where we launched into something new that we're calling Public Procurement for Innovation, or PPI, is where we're trying to remove the roadblocks or the barriers that have hindered procurement for innovation. Because in the past, we've had procurement that goes on for a period of 60 days, 90 days. And then we also ask for very difficult things that really startups that are, you know, the champions of innovation cannot measure up to. For example, you know, in the traditional procurement methods, we ask for the bidder must have a physical location, you must have a turnover or a bank statement that's this big. And, you know, that's really worked mostly for big corporates that have the financial muscles to compete. But then it chokes out startups and, you know, essentially chokes out innovation. And so what we've done is we are piloting the PPI, or the Public Procurement for Innovation, where we've removed all these barriers. And we don't care if you have a physical location, because you've noticed, you know how startups are co-located in some maybe innovation hubs, or some work from their living room, but they have amazing technologies, amazing innovations. And so we've removed things like that, and also reduced the procurement days from something like 60 days to 15 days instead. And so this allows for quick turnaround. We have a sort of like a brief session once all the bidders have the ones who fulfill the administrative requirements, which are, you know, at least registered as a company, you're a taxpayer, which is enough. And then And then we give them a briefing session where we introduce the problem statement, we explain what it is, we respond to any questions that they may have in order to reduce, the number of days you allow for appealing or for asking questions. So you have one briefing session, everyone goes home happy, and then you give them the next 10 days to now go and bring back their prototype or MVP for those that have. And that way we allow for their juices to run. Innovators don't want to go through the whole bureaucratic process. Most of them don't even know how to go through that. And so that's what we are piloting at the moment with about three projects. And then from there we will readjust and see what works, what doesn't work, tweak a few things, and then we fully launch it as our new approach to procurement for innovation.
Wow, it is great to hear how Rwanda is enabling innovation by removing barriers in public procurement processes. This is such a crucial topic within the smart city discussion, especially when considering that current procurement processes in public administration are often too complicated and time-consuming, which makes them actually rather a brake than an accelerator of innovation for cities. Alice, recently I also read about the Policy Lab pilot project, which the Rwandan Ministry of ICT and Innovation initiated in the area of smart waste management. Within the project, I saw you also worked in a co-creation process together with the citizens. Could you elaborate a bit more on the project, how it started, and how the process was set up?
Thank you. That's a very good question. So, as I said, we're trying so many new things at the same time, and the aim behind that is to really empower our startups or our innovation ecosystem, but also respond to real life challenges that our citizens are facing. And so, the policy lab is really, as it sounds, it's a lab where we test and experiment on policies before we launch them out and make them official. Because once a policy is in place, amending it or changing it then is a whole other process that can go from 2 years and more. And so that takes so much time. It takes money. It takes a lot of thinking and so on. And so we are trying to now change it and work backwards in a way of. We co-design with the citizens. We are trying to use the human-centered approach as much as we can in our policy making, in our solution development, in basically everything that we do. And so the policy lab now allows us to one, we are able to save money because we are piloting and trying things at a small scale and co-designing with the citizens, as we said. And we test and we see what works, what does not work, what needs to be changed, what needs to be brought in that had not been considered before because of maybe, from the citizen perspective, there's an angle as government maybe we hadn't even considered. And so to pilot that particular the policy lab, we chose one project to start with, and that was in solid waste management. Solid waste management, globally has become an issue. I think now from even COP26, we can see how, we need our climate action needs to be really strengthened, and we need to be more aggressive with it to create a resilient environment for us all globally, not just in one country. And so we started with that, and we did a survey where we interviewed or surveyed 15,000 households in the city of Kigali. We were trying to really understand their perspective on, do you understand waste management? Do you understand waste segregation? Okay, if you do, what's stopping you from doing it? Or what can we do to enable you to be able to segregate your waste? Because our landfill at the moment is we're just burying everything because we're not doing segregation. Now, segregation is not an innovation, globally, but in our context, it's new. We haven't been doing that. We have not done segregation at the national level. And so we wanted to bring in the citizens and get their ideas on what mechanisms or tools are best fitted for them to be able to segregate their waste at household level. It's been interesting. We had amazing, amazing feedback from the citizens. They pitched their ideas on what they think can be relevant. Also, we have different social classes. So one group might be able to afford a wheelie bin with the wheels. Another group is only able to afford the one-time use bags. Another group is only able to use a sack that is recyclable or that can be used over a period of 4 months and so on. And so now with that, we are able to design solutions that are relevant to each category. So it's been an amazing experience, and we're still in the process of designing the solutions. But it's really been from a perspective what the citizen wants, rather than what we've done in the past, where we say, okay, we think this is what's best for the country, coming from a good place, but then you find that it's not relevant to the people right at the bottom of the pyramid. So this way, we are now working from the bottom upward, and we're excited to see the results and to share them across the country. All the government institutions that have heard about it are super excited as well. It's really going to be, a life-changing experience for our citizens, we believe. And also, sorry if I may add, it encourages a multi-stakeholder approach, where we come together in one room, co-located as a team, and say, all the relevant institutions, everyone concerned, including the private sector, not just government institutions. Actually, for this particular pilot that we're doing, or I would say even 70% has been private sector in the room, So they tell us as well, okay, the citizen has said this, but this is how it works on the market. When, as a private company, when I begin to pilot in or to invest in something like this, then these are the challenges that I'm met with. If government could step in and do this and that, it would unlock a lot of things for us, and then we're able to really provide solutions on the market. And so it's been, quite an experience working with the private sector in one room, responding to one challenge that the citizen has.
Thanks so much, Alice, for these valuable insights. I think your case of waste separation in Rwanda describes once more how essential it is to co-create these urban solutions together with the citizens so that they, in the end, can benefit most from it. Is this project also connected with Rwanda's Digital Transformation Center? It would be great if you could elaborate a bit more on the center's work and how it was decided to adopt smart cities as a main topic.
The Digital Transformation Center has really been a key partner in everything that we're doing in under smart cities. One, we have the digitalization agenda, but then beyond digitizing services and processes, we are also, stepping into turning them into smart or integrated solutions that provide data and innovation. And so the DTC, or the Digital Transformation Center, has been at the core of our activities. One, they've been providing technical support. They've also provided, financial support where we've had some design challenges, for example. We throw out a problem statement, and then we allow the private sector or the startups to compete and provide solutions. And so the DTC has been at the core of running such initiatives. And then under the policy lab, they're also providing more support, and also one even availing resources, the team that is actually working on this. And also in the day-to-day discussions, feedback loops, and providing support where we need, and implementing human-centered approach, or helping us educate more of our colleagues and our peers on how to use human-centered approach, which is really at the core of the policy lab.
Thanks so much, Alice. I would like to ask you one final question. We frequently hear and read on the internet that Rwanda is becoming Africa's Singapore. Would you say this is good or not really beneficial for your work?
Thanks, Julia, for the question. We absolutely love being associated with Singapore, although we would like to make a name for ourselves, but also Singapore is a country that we look up to. They've done amazing work in terms of turning their nation into a smart one, and I think they were one of the best countries even during the COVID pandemic. They were one of the best respondents because of how smart their nation is. And so, absolutely, we don't mind being referred to as the Singapore of Africa. But more, concretely, is we are trying to position ourselves as the innovation hub or the smart cities hub on the continent, where we've also positioned ourselves as a proof of concept nation, where we have a small market, yes, but it's also an advantage for us where. If innovators want to test their solutions, their innovations, they can come and test it on a small market of 13 million people and then be able to scale to larger nations like Nigeria that are in, I believe, 60s or hundreds of millions of people. And so, being a proof of concept, it means we remove the barriers. One is of there's ease of opening a business or starting a business in Rwanda. We also have a policy sandbox. We have now the policy lab where people can come and test, where and other usually bureaucratic barriers would impede innovation, but here we actually encourage it and we promote it. And so absolutely, we want to be the innovation hub, the smart cities hub of the continent, welcoming all sorts of innovations and being the first beneficiaries of those solutions. For example, we've had, for Zipline, I'm not sure if you're familiar with it. Zipline is a company that has used drones for delivering pharmaceutical or medical supplies or products. Being a country of 1,000 hills, we have very difficult terrain sometimes in areas that are, one, they're remote, two, the terrain is too hard for cars or any, people going there without being on foot. And so in those areas, when you have someone with an emergency need for maybe blood transfusion for medical support and stuff, then we use drones to deliver blood, to deliver medicine, to deliver all sorts of pharmaceutical products to them in under, an hour. And so now Zipline piloted here because in other countries they could not, there was no drone policy. No one knew what drones could do beyond, thinking that they're military threats or stuff like that. And so in Rwanda, instead, although we did not have a drone policy, we gave them space and room to come and test their innovation. And then once it was fully deployed and successful, it has been now scaled to other countries, I believe now in Ghana, Nigeria, and also in the US. And so we really want to be that country where people are okay to come and test their products, to come and test their innovations, have enough time and room to tweak and do any revamping that is needed before scaling to larger markets.
Thanks so much, Alice, for this interesting talk.
Sure.
In case you want to learn more about the activities of the ISCN, please visit our website smart-city-dialogue.de. We hope you enjoyed listening to our podcast, and goodbye.